On this week's edition of New York Now, the COVID-19 vaccine could arrive in New York in just a few days. Governor Cuomo says the state is ready.
It's a massive undertaking.
And a shift in climate change policy from the state controller's office. Marie French from Politico joins me with details. Democrats will still have total control over state government next year, but Republicans are optimistic about the future. Senate Republican leader Rob Ort joins me with his perspective. And marijuana could be legalized for adult use in New York next year, but that means Democrats will have to strike a deal on the issue. We'll tell you where lawmakers remain divided on marijuana and hear from those leading the negotiations. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation.
We will pass a law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. So two big things happened in New York this week. The first and probably most important is that there are now more than 5,000 people hospitalized with COVID-19 in New York for the first time since late May. That's more than 10 times the number of people hospitalized at the start of September. But second, we now know more about how the state plans to distribute the COVID-19 vaccine. Governor Cuomo said this week that it could be just a few days before the first round of vaccines comes to New York, and those first vaccines will go to nursing homes and healthcare workers, especially those considered to be most at risk of contracting the coronavirus.
The first shipment is allocated on the base of number of healthcare workers and nursing home residents in the state. The first allocation is for nursing home residents, nursing home staff, and high-risk healthcare workers. So that's how we're allocating what Buffalo gets versus Monroe versus Essex versus New York City.
And we also got some huge news this week on how the state plans to combat climate change, just in a different way. Controller Tom DiNapoli says the state will no longer invest its public retirement fund in companies that aren't preparing for a more sustainable future. Marie French covers energy and the environment for Politico New York. She's with me in studio. Marie, thanks so much.
Thank you, Dan. Lovely to be here.
So before we get to the controller's announcement, I want to just clarify on vaccines, because while the FDA may approve it very time soon, we're taping on Friday, of course, we don't really know when the first needle is going to go in the arm in New York, right?
Yeah, it's a little unclear. I mean, the governor said that the vaccine would be shipping sometime this weekend and go to some cold storage sites to get to hospital workers and also to be distributed at pharmacies to nursing home residents and staff. But it's not really clear, you know, when everything sort of gets rolling.
So we'll see. I'm sure there will be something very public about the first vaccination in New York State that everybody will know about and will report on our website. Let's turn to the controller's announcement, because I think this is huge. It's a huge win for environmental advocates specifically. So the way that it's been framed is, which I should say, the public retirement fund is the third largest in the country. This is a lot of money. We invest it in stocks. This is how it works. So he's saying that it's going to be net zero carbon emissions by 2040 is our investment portfolio. What does that mean exactly? Because I thought it meant divesting from fossil fuel companies, but maybe not. So give me the details.
Yeah, so this is a really significant announcement, because New York's pension fund is the third largest in the United States. And the 2040 net zero target is the earliest of any major fund in North America. So that goal essentially means that you go through your entire portfolio, you look at every company, and you try to match everything up to be at net zero greenhouse gas emissions, which is a big ask. I mean, you think about everything we do every day, and it consumes fossil fuels and it creates carbon emissions. So it's going to be a really major shift. And the comptroller has laid out a pathway to get there by reviewing various investments along the way.
So we don't really know what it means. So they're going to have standards for evaluating these companies that the state invests in. And they haven't developed those standards yet, right? So when I'm looking at these companies, so it doesn't mean that the state's going to look at something like ExxonMobil and say, we're not giving them our money for the investment. It just means that we're looking at companies that are going to be net zero?
So there is a review process as part of this. The comptroller sort of expanded his ongoing review, which had already started. He had started with coal companies because those are obviously, you know, fairly significant emitters, and coal is a pretty bad fuel for the environment, and had divested from most of those companies. And the way he's doing it and has said he's doing it is to, you know, engage with the companies, say like, well, what's your plan to transition, you know, to comply with the Paris Accords and to get to, now the goal will be net zero by 2040. So he's doing that in sort of different stages right now. He's looking at tar sands. And as part of this announcement this week, he sort of laid out a more, you know, within 5 years, we're going to be looking at shale gas companies. We're going to be looking at the companies that service them. We're going to be looking at the oil majors, you know, ExxonMobil, and the, you know, the midsize gas extraction companies, and then eventually get all the way down to like the pipeline and storage companies.
So we'll know more, I guess, is over the next few years as the controller really starts this process. And I think for environmental advocates, it'll be really, they're going to watch really closely to see what happens in terms of, is the controller meeting this goal that he is going to hopefully get to by 2040. So we'll be watching. Marie French from Politico, thank you so much for being here. Lawmakers will return to Albany in just a few weeks for the start of the new legislative session, and Republicans have a tough road ahead for the next 2 years. They lost a few seats in the Senate in November, which means Democrats now have a 2-to-1 advantage in the chamber. So getting their message across next year is going to be harder than ever. But Republicans see themselves as an important check on Democrats, who have total control over state government for the time being. I spoke this week with Senate Republican leader Rob Ort about their strategy going into next year and the future of the party in New York. Senate Republican leader Rob Ort, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Anytime. So Republicans will stay in the minority in the state Senate next year, meaning Democrats will have control of the chamber for at least another 2 years. But your conference, the Republicans, still represent millions of New Yorkers around the state. You will have 20 seats when the session starts. Tell me about your strategy in making sure that your voters' voices are heard while you remain in the minority.
Yeah, well, it's in a lot of ways, our strategy doesn't shift, although we have 7 new members. And I think that's going to provide us a jolt of energy and enthusiasm. And, you know, these folks are coming here just elected. They don't know the difference between the minority and the majority, right? They're not coming into it with this sort of preconceived notion of what that means. They've been elected. As you put it, we represent millions of New Yorkers, and they're coming here to do the job and to speak for their constituents and advocate for them. So I think our conference is going to look different. I think there's going to be a different mentality, a different way we go about our business. But it's really the same strategy, which is to be a voice of opposition, of criticism when appropriate, but also to, you know, try to point things out that maybe aren't being talked about as part of the conversation, to insert things into the conversation, and of course work with the majority where we can.
You know, this is kind of like a vicious cycle for people that don't know Albany. When you're in the minority, you really need the majority to get things done. You can't do it unilaterally, obviously. I'm wondering, are there issues that your conference can work with Democrats on? Like, I know that your conference is passionate about broadband, for example. Mm-hmm. Are there any issues that you've identified to get some of those priorities over the finish line while you remain in the minority?
Yeah, well, I think broadband would be certainly one of those issues, especially now that the, you know, the Democrats have some upstate members. And I tend to think this has been a bigger issue upstate New York than it is, you know, as you get closer to New York City and Long Island. And so, you know, I also think, you know, doing more for our small businesses, because especially with the pandemic going on, there's a number of small businesses who I hear from daily that are very concerned about their survivability. Absent, obviously, we don't know what's going to happen at the federal level. I think we can all agree that something needs to happen at the federal level. But we have things we can do, maybe not financially, but regulatory wise, or from a, you know, from a legislative perspective, that might be able to help some of these businesses, you know, get to the other side of this pandemic. You know, a lot of us, I think we look to the other side of this and we think, oh, you know, maybe it's going to be almost over. There's a vaccine coming online. And, you know, at some point, hopefully in 2021, we can sort of return to some, the next chapter, so to speak, where, you know, we're not living under lockdowns and all of this. But for many of these small businesses, there's no guarantee they get to that other side at this point. So I'm hopeful that we can work to support small businesses through less regulations, maybe some incentives. Broadband is a very big issue. Our farmers, making sure we're supporting our agriculture sector in New York, we're hopeful for. And look, if we can work on those issues together, I think all New Yorkers would be better for that bipartisanship. But no doubt, if you listen to some of the Democrats, like Senator Gennaris's rhetoric, it seems like they may also go further on issues where we're going to disagree.
Right. I was thinking the same thing. And, you know, you're looking at a conference right now with 20 members, like you said. Last year, you had 20 members, basically, like you said, because of people that had dropped off. I'm wondering what you think happened in the November elections. Democrats gained a few seats, and those few seats usually wouldn't be that big of a deal, but now they have a supermajority, and you have a few less seats. So why do you think that you didn't get as much support from voters as Democrats in some of these really close swing districts?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, a couple things. One, we had 10 open seats in our column, 10 members of our conference that were not running for re-election for various reasons. And, some of those seats were challenging districts, you know, where there were Democratic enrollment advantages. And then obviously we had to try to go and flip Democrat seats, you know, seats that were held by Democratic members. We did flip two. One in the Hudson Valley, Mike Martucci will be joining us. And then, of course, one on Long Island with Alexis Wyke joining us down there in Senate District 3. And we held the bulk of those 10, but we weren't able to hold them all. And obviously that makes, as you put it, that makes a difference between a strong majority and a supermajority. I think that there were a couple things. One, you had some global issues that I think did make it more challenging to talk about issues like bail reform and, you know, defunding the police and the business climate and taxes. People were so concerned about the coronavirus pandemic, and it was tough. That drowned out, and that also affected a lot of people's views. So the pandemic was important to you. That seemed to take precedence over a lot of other issues. And then you had, of course, the national election and the narrative that centered around that. And so I do I wonder how much of that was already baked in to some of these voters' minds, meaning no matter what we were doing on the ground, no matter what our candidates was, you know, in some cases, was the message able to penetrate and reach some of these voters in a way that made a difference? But I think the one thing about the supermajority that I think is of note, the Democrats have handed over a significant amount of power to the governor for the better part of last year. So I don't know what the supermajority is going to do that they couldn't have done, you know, they didn't show a real willingness to challenge the governor before. I don't anticipate, and even the governor sort of talked about the supermajority maybe being a lot about nothing, but I don't know what will come of that or if they're really willing to challenge the governor and use their newfound status.
You know, I think this election was unique, and I think that everybody can say that. When you're looking 2 years from now, when you're trying to grow your ranks in the Senate, in the Assembly, seats in Congress, but particularly for you in the Senate, do you think there's room for the Republican Party in New York to shift, to maybe meet voters halfway on some issues to win their support in future elections? I'm thinking of issues like marijuana legalization that polls really well, or other issues that might be controversial but might win some voter support.
Yeah, I think, look, you're always, after these elections, you always look at, you know, everyone does an after-action review and tries to assess, okay, what went well, what didn't go well, where do we have to continue to work? But look, we're not going to abandon our core issues. We can't do that, because what you do, in my experience with that, is you abandon people that are with you through thick and thin. So we're going to continue to stand for, whether it's law enforcement, whether it's small business and lower taxes, whether it's Second Amendment and gun owners across New York State, but obviously whether it's broadband, whether it's school funding and supporting our local school districts, whether it's our farm, we're going to continue to try to find areas where we can reach and appeal to voters and grow our conference. But I think we stand a very good chance. If you look at some of the races where we were competitive, absent maybe a national election like this, I think we have a very good chance to flip even more seats than we did. And we will get to work on that, you know, going forward.
All right. Well, we will see in 2 years, and we will see you up here in Albany in January. Senate Republican Leader Rob Ort, thanks so much for being here.
Dan, thanks for having me.
So another big issue heading into next year is the potential legalization of marijuana in New York. A small number of Democrats have been trying for years to build support for legalization. And it almost happened 2 years ago when Democrats thought they had the votes to get something passed. But that fizzled out, and the issue slipped away this year because of the coronavirus. Fast forward to now, and Democrats think they might finally have the political muscle to strike a deal on marijuana. But there's still a lot for lawmakers to work out on the issue before that happens. Take a look. Marijuana could finally become legal in New York next year, and the chances of that happening are higher than ever. Not only is the state strapped for cash, but most states bordering New York have now either legalized the drug or are headed in that direction. Both Vermont and Massachusetts already have legal weed, and New Jersey is set to create its own program in the coming months. That's left New York behind on the issue.
And right now, all we're doing is pushing New Yorkers across state borders to Massachusetts, up where you live, to New Jersey very soon, down where I live, to other surrounding states, where they spend their money in other states to buy the products that we could be producing and selling right here in New York.
State Senator Liz Krueger is one of several Democrats who've led the charge for legalizing marijuana in New York in recent years. And she's part of a growing number of lawmakers who think there could be movement on the issue in 2021. But that's easier said than done. The state will have to set up an entire regulatory and tax structure, and that's left Democrats divided on how to move forward. For one, lawmakers don't want to create a system that still drives people to buy the drug illegally.
And then there's the fundamental question of how much are we going to tax these products? And I fall into the category of people who say, don't get greedy. We need to make sure we have a successful set of programs. And that means we need to make sure we are not pricing the legal safe products at a higher cost than the existing illegal unknown products, because then people won't move.
And for that, New York actually finds itself at an advantage on marijuana. More than a dozen states have already legalized the drug for adult use, and that's given New York plenty of time to see what's worked and what hasn't. State Senator Diane Savino is another Democrat involved in discussions on legalization.
We don't need to make the same mistakes that other states have made, and they have made a lot of mistakes, and we should be very careful as we move forward.
But Democrats who control the state legislature are still divided on how exactly to legalize marijuana. A top issue is what the state should do with the tax revenue from the marijuana industry, which is expected to be about $300 million each year. Some Democrats want part of those funds to be reinvested in communities of color, where the state's drug laws have been enforced at higher rates.
The people that I have been working with and are committed to this model feel very strongly that revenue should be used for social justice purposes, to support undoing damage done, again, in poor communities of color.
But others want to be more flexible with the money. Governor Andrew Cuomo wants it to be available for however the state needs it at the time, rather than being earmarked for a specific purpose. And he says the financial incentive for that strategy is greater this year. New York is facing a budget deficit north of $10 billion because of the coronavirus.
I think this year it is ripe because the state is going to be desperate for funding, even with Biden, even with a stimulus.
But there's a few problems with that. For one, tax revenue from legalizing marijuana is only expected to be about $300 million each year. That's a drop in the bucket compared to the state's budget gap. And second, budget analysts say it'll be years before the marijuana industry actually generates that much revenue.
In the short term, it's not likely to provide immediate relief, first of all, because of timing, second, because of the magnitude. You know, if you have the $8 billion gap this year and at most that's going to be $200, $300 million 4 years from now for marijuana.
So supporters of legalization are hoping to drive the conversation away from money and toward what they see as the other benefits of legalizing marijuana. Chris Alexander does government relations for a cannabis company on the West Coast that's hoping to set up shop in New York. He says lawmakers should consider if the state's drug laws are doing more harm than good, especially for people of color.
One thing that we was very clear over the years of enforcement of, you know, different administrations is that prohibition has consistently been selectively enforced, right? And it's been selectively enforced in communities of color. It's been selectively enforced around young people. And so I think really it's more so that prohibition doesn't work. It hasn't worked, which is why you're seeing so many states make the decision to go the other direction.
New York already decriminalized small amounts of marijuana a few years ago. Holding less than 2 ounces of the drug is no longer a crime, but you will receive a fine. And some don't want to see New York go any further, saying full-out legalization of marijuana could bring huge companies into the state to exploit the market. Dr. Kevin Sabet is a former drug policy advisor under President Barack Obama.
This is commercialized by an industry not very different than like big tobacco and big alcohol, which are definitely industries certainly Democrats are not big fans of, and because they've seen how they've, you know, run roughshod over public health. And marijuana wouldn't be any different.
That's actually something that supporters of legalization want to avoid as well, hopefully through oversight by the state. Kruger says they want to create a system that favors competition and innovation rather than corporate control.
We want to invest in entrepreneurs in these communities to be able to start up businesses related to cannabis. We want to provide technical assistance. We want to make sure this does not become a big pharma model with 3 or 4 companies controlling all of this in the state of New York.
But it's worth noting that the marijuana industry is already operating in New York, just in a different way. Medical marijuana has been legal here for the last 5 years, with 10 companies now licensed to sell in New York. But the state's medical marijuana program hasn't really grown in that time. And leaders from the industry are hoping that changes as the state considers full legalization. Stephen Dahmer is the chief medical officer of Vireo New York, a medical marijuana company based outside the capital region.
We're ready to serve more. We're starting to see research come together to support the use of medical cannabis, especially in chronic pain for those patients on opioids. We have a quality tested product, which has proven the test of time, and we're excited for the program to expand at a minimum to include additional qualifying conditions.
Right now, New York's medical marijuana program is considered one of the most restrictive in the country. The list of conditions that qualify someone for medical marijuana is shorter than other states, and only certain doctors are allowed to prescribe the drug. Negust Abebe is director of public policy for Columbia Care, a medical marijuana company, and president of the New York Medical Cannabis Association.
So the New York Medical Cannabis Program is definitely one of the more restrictive ones in the country. It has a very short conditions list, which limits patient access and takes away doctor discretion, because we know that the research is evolving a lot faster than regulations can keep up with.
Broadly speaking, medical marijuana companies want the state to allow more people to use the drug and make it easier to get. And that's something that's supported as well by Senator Savino, who was a key architect of the state's medical marijuana program 5 years ago. She's now trying to expand it with legislation that would allow more dispensaries and give doctors more discretion to prescribe marijuana when they think it's the right choice for their patient, regardless of condition.
If a doctor, in his or her estimation, believes that a patient could be benefited by the use of any particular drug that is legal in the state of New York to treat whatever that condition is, we shouldn't get in their way. We should allow them to make that determination for their patient. So that's what we're recommending.
Lawmakers could pass an expansion to the state's medical marijuana program without legalizing the drug for recreational use, but it's more likely that they'll do both at once, expanding the medical program while creating a system for adult use. That's where the state's medical marijuana companies come in. Some of them want in on the adult use market as well and say they're ready to help jumpstart the new industry. Here's Abebe again.
We also know that the future size of the New York market is going to be significant. And we believe that including the medical operators will help start this program off on the strongest possible foot, in order to fund that future expansion.
For that to happen, New York will have to decide if medical companies will be allowed into the recreational industry. That's still up in the air. And that leads to other questions about legalizing cannabis. Like, what if some communities just don't want marijuana companies to set up shop where they live? Kruger says she'd be fine with allowing communities to ban marijuana retailers if that moves the needle on legalization.
So it is true that there are certain populations that are more concerned about it, and they want the right to not have retailers in their communities, the right not to have stores. I think that's fine.
And there are other issues with marijuana legalization that still have to be ironed out as well. Like, will New York allow people to grow the drug at home? And how many companies will be allowed to operate in the state? And then there's the issue of road safety. There's currently no easy way to test if someone's driving under the influence of marijuana. Opponents of legalization say that's a problem.
But we're going to have to invest a lot more in the driving issue and impairment. We're going to have to invest a lot more in labs and toxicology. It's going to cost money. And I don't know if they're going to be willing to do that. And that's why I worry about doing it in the first place.
Those are all questions that Democrats will have to figure out in the next few months if they want to legalize marijuana next year. But with more states around the country now moving toward legalization, lawmakers like Savino see this as New York's moment.
Question is, we're surrounded by states that are going to have legal marijuana programs. Does New York want to be in the game or not?
So a tricky part to the conversation on marijuana is that there were a lot of new people elected to the legislature this year, and we don't really know how they're going to vote on marijuana. So that's something we'll be looking into as session starts next month. But we'll have to leave it there for this week. Don't forget to check out our website every day for more. But until then, thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.